Hey everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace? Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
Hey, everybody. Happy Saturday. This is Chuck here to introduce you to this week's Saturday Select. And we are going with a classic from the archives, How Marijuana Works. Why are we releasing this today on April 20th? Oh, because we're juveniles. That's why, everybody. Hope you enjoy it. It's a very insightful episode. And here we go with How Marijuana Works.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant getting his demons out.
Man, how about this music?
Yeah, this is thanks to our guest producer, Noel.
Yeah.
Who is, Jerry's actually producing, but he's got the musical touch. He's our dub producer.
Yeah, if you want to reggaeify your podcast, Noel is the man.
Yes, so big thanks to Noel.
Yeah, and great idea by you.
I?
Yeah. I. I love that.
How you doing, man?
I'm great.
You got some good feelings going on?
Yeah, I mean, we've covered grow houses, and we did medical marijuana, right?
I don't think so.
No?
No, because a lot of it didn't seem familiar when I was looking into it in this article.
Huh.
So we've definitely done grow houses.
Yeah.
Which is kind of backwards.
Yeah. Well, not really.
No?
Got to grow up
that's
first.
That's true. So, Chuck, here we are. We're talking about pot, and as is our thing, we're going to talk about pot in a very, like, above-the-boards, mature way.
Are we?
I think we can.
Sure.
We've talked about some other stuff before. Poop. We've talked about poop plenty of times.
Yeah, well,
I think... talked about booze.
Every time we cover drugs, we like to cover the scientific aspects, the social ramifications.
Right, how it's impacted culture.
Yeah.
Why would this one be any different?
Well, and this is probably the biggest, you know? It's the most ubiquitous, I would say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Maybe the gateway to all the other episodes.
Very funny.
So, I guess we should start at the beginning. How about that?
Okay.
Let's talk about pot and its history. It's very long, long, long history. And actually, for most of that history, it has been widely beloved and appreciated. Apparently, pot's been cultivated, or marijuana. We're going to use all that interchangeably. Weed, pot, marijuana,
yeah, but
cannabis.
That's probably where it will stop. Like if either one of us says ganja or
sticky icky. Like it's in this article.
Like we should just shut it down right then.
All right. We'll do the, hey, take that back.
Yeah.
One of us will say that, okay?
Yeah, but like you said, I mean, this is going to be an overview because we could do, honestly, four shows on the history of pot.
There's quite a rabbit hole we could go down here.
Yeah.
We got to avoid it.
Yeah, but we'll give you a historical overview. How about that?
Sure. So, like I said, pot's been cultivated for 8,500 years. And like I also said that it's mostly been appreciated most of that time for two reasons. One, it is an industrial, or it was until the rise of the synthetics, a major industrial fiber, hemp.
Sure.
And then secondly, it was a, or it still is,
a medicinal herb that kind of spills over into recreational use as well.
So in the 28th century in China, it looks like it was probably used medicinally.
Yeah.
And not recreationally, but there are definitely records, written records of the cultivation of cannabis.
Well, yeah, a guy named Shen Nung, who was an emperor but was also China's first physician, wrote about how ma, that's what they called pot back then in China.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. Was good for the yin and the yang.
Both of them.
Right, which is actually, as we'll see, that's a pretty astute observation early on because what he's talking about is balance or homeostasis,
yeah,
which pot definitely affects.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
They have found a mummy, a 3,000-year-old Egyptian mummy, and looked into this, and it contained quite a few drugs, but it definitely contained THC.
Mm-hmm.
So the Egyptians were getting down.
Yeah.
Maybe medicinally, who knows?
In 1001 Arabian Nights, it makes an appearance called Bhang, B-H-A-N-G. Sinbad apparently loves the stuff. But supposedly his was hash mixed with opium, which is way more hardcore than what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably so. They think it originated perhaps in India and north of the Himalayas. Is their best guess.
Yeah, they really have no idea.
Yeah.
And actually, there's like a lot of debate still over whether there's more than one type of plant.
What do you mean?
So there's cannabis indica.
Yeah.
Cannabis sativa.
Yeah, they're different.
There's another one called cannabis ruderalis, supposedly.
Oh, really?
And there's an ongoing debate among botanists over whether they're all actually just different, like varieties of the same plant.
Right.
Or if they really are different species of plants in the same family.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But I think the current common wisdom is that there's at least two, cannabis sativa and cannabis indica.
Yeah, we may as well get into that a little bit. The indica is, the plant itself is shorter and fatter and better suited for indoor growing. And the sativa is taller. It can get really tall, like 25 feet.
Yeah, and it's spindlier.
Yeah, and thinner. Although I think for cultivation, I don't think, even though it's grown outdoors, I don't think they're growing the 25-foot plants.
No, I would imagine the helicopters can see them a lot more easily.
Yeah, and the indica is known for more of a body high, quote-unquote, couch-locked.
Yeah.
Mellow.
Yeah.
And the sativa is more known for more energetic and cerebral and creative, more of a brain high.
Right. And then conversely, one can make you more paranoid, one can make you more drooly.
Yeah, and typically these days, if you are a recreational or medicinal user, you're probably getting some sort of a hybrid strain.
Good point. And actually, some of the strains, those hybrid strains, have some of the best names, like Green Crack. It's a pretty good name.
Yeah.
AK-47, White Widow. White Widow's actually a pure strain, isn't it, of indica?
I'm not sure.
I think it is.
Yeah, Maui Wowie. Oh, the pot names, they're pretty funny.
They've definitely gotten better from the 70s. Like Maui Wowie.
Yeah, that sounds very old
face
school.
Slapping. Yeah.
So should we talk about...
Maui Wowie.
Should we talk a little bit about its history in this country, in the United States?
Yeah, so... I think we should get to that because, as I said, Chuck, when you look back on pot all of these years and it's how it was used, it was generally like appreciated, used medicinally, used recreationally, not vilified. It wasn't until it hit North America that it really started to become vilified.
Yeah, well, it had a good run here too in the States for a couple of hundred years. Hemp was grown and cultivated and widely used. Some people say it's, you know, the most versatile plant on earth as far as the different uses you can get out of it. And it was in the 1619 Virginia Assembly, they even said you have to grow hemp if you're a farmer in Virginia. So not only was it encouraged, it was actually law in Virginia at least.
Well.
So it had a good run until the early 1900s and 1920s.
Well, what's interesting is back in this time, you remember that part in Dazed and Confused where The biggest stoner of the whole group is talking about George Washington, like,
oh yeah,
like planning camp all day and then comes home and smokes a big bowl of it.
Yeah, Martha had it ready.
It's not clear whether or not any of them were smoking pot, and it's entirely possible that they weren't.
Sure.
Because the idea of smoking pot was lost to the ages for a very long time.
Yeah.
And the Greeks actually grew marijuana, but they didn't smoke it. They just used it for its fibers.
Right.
And it almost appears like they had no idea you could smoke it and it was psychoactive. So it's possible that our forefathers didn't smoke pot.
Yeah.
You know, and they were just growing it for industrial uses.
And meanwhile, Native Americans were like, you guys are crazy. rope is nice, but you know.
Yeah. It can be both.
That's right. In the early 1900s, the Mexican Revolution of 1910, this is one of the big turning points because a lot of Mexican immigrants came to the U.S. and they were like, hey, you know, you can smoke this stuff.
Right.
It's pretty nice. And because Mexican immigrants had were sort of looked down upon, all of a sudden pot was looked down upon.
Really? Mexican immigrants were looked down upon somewhere in the U.S. history? Yeah, the whole thing about pot being vilified, or I guess there was a moral panic, basically, is what they call it, that erupted around it.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was based in racism toward Mexican Americans or Mexican immigrants.
Yeah, in the 1930s, especially in the Depression, they were sort of had a bad name. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they're immigrants in this country and we're Americans and we're in a depression and we want the work and kind of a lot of the same arguments here these days.
Right.
But the association with pot was definitely part of it.
It definitely was. But also I read this this NPR blog on Code Switch about this very topic, and they were saying, like, yes, there's a lot of racism that led to the criminalization of pot.
Yeah.
But Mexico was 20 years ahead of the U.S. in criminalizing pot as well. So you can't just say, well, it was just Americans' disdain or dislike or distrust of Mexicans.
Right.
It was, you know, it's more complex than that. And this guy was saying that really you can conclude there was a fear of what this drug did.
Right.
And the reason why there was a fear of what the drug did was because the newspaper reports at the time had people like killing entire families.
Yeah.
And like wandering around the streets like with somebody's head.
Right.
Covered in blood because they just smoked a joint.
Yeah.
And they were really trying to unpack this. Like, why would that happen? Did it happen? Were all of them just overblown reports? The fact was, when you picked up the Los Angeles Times or the New York Times,
yeah,
there were front page stories about this, and they were like, brown-skinned Mexican kills white family of eight on marijuana cigarette.
Yeah.
And that's why. And actually, the word marijuana was kind of used as a derogatory term to kind of Mexicanify cannabis, which is what it had been called prior to that.
Oh, is that where it came from?
Yeah.
Huh. Did not know that.
I'm off my soapbox.
Look at you teaching me. Well, movies like Reefer Madness definitely didn't help. In 1936, the famous propaganda movie from French director Louis Gasnier, it's, you know, required viewing for any college student at some
really
point.
It really is.
Yeah, it's not very good and it's not very enjoyable. But it is kind of funny showing the reefer addicts, you know, driven to insanity. Right. By the marijuana cigarettes.
And somebody gets murdered, right?
I don't even remember.
I think someone murders somebody else because they smoked pot.
And then in 1937, a year after Reefer Madness, Congress passed the Marijuana Tax Act. And this is basically where the tide turned and it was essentially criminalized because it called for restricting possession just to individuals who paid a tax.
Which is like $1,000.
For medical or industrial use.
Right.
So in other words, if you're just, you know, Sammy Pothead, you can't live that way anymore in this country.
No, you would basically have to set up a shell organization, pay the $1,000 tax, and then you'd be able to import marijuana. But if you were caught with it, smoking it, you'd still get busted.
Yeah.
It was a big deal when that happened. And you can kind of lay all of this at the feet of one guy, a moral crusader who ran the Federal Bureau of Narcotics in the 30s, well, the 30s until the 60s. His name was Harry Anslinger. And he was the one who really kind of started this crusade against pot and got the government to turn against it, got the press to turn against it, and got the Marijuana Tax Act passed.
Yeah.
But even while this guy's like sitting there shouting like, "All marijuana's going to kill us all, it's a horrible drug, and it's as bad as it gets," there were studies, independent studies that were funded by the government that were showing, like, you guys are kind of overstating this a little bit.
Yeah, in 1944, Mayor LaGuardia of New York issued a report that basically said that it doesn't induce violence, insanity, or sex crimes.
Yeah, and he was a moral reformer himself. Remember, he went after the Minsky brothers from the burlesque episode.
Yeah.
So it's not like he was just some big pothead. Like, he was a moral reformer himself, and he still found this report.
Yeah, that's a good point. That led to the sentencing laws over time have kind of waffled back and forth.
Yeah.
In the 50s, they were pretty strict because of the Boggs Act and the Narcotics Control Act. And that's when they started setting mandatory minimums for basically any drug, but including marijuana, of course.
Yeah. Like, you would go to prison for a long time if you got caught with pot.
Yeah, 2 to 10 years for a first-time offender in the 1950s.
Getting caught with pot.
Yeah.
That's it. Any amount, right?
Uh-huh. And in the 60s, things relaxed a little bit in every way you can imagine in this country. And, you know, President Kennedy and LBJ issued reports that found kind of the same thing as they found out in the 40s. It doesn't induce violence. And in these reports, it said it didn't wasn't a gateway drug either.
Yeah.
In the 1960s.
Which is still up for debate, really.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever been definitively settled.
No, because you read every other report you read is going to say something a little different about what the gateway drug is.
And plus, I think defining what makes a gateway drug, too, has never been fully established.
Yeah.
You can't. How can you test something scientifically if it's you don't have it defined, you know?
Yeah. And the 1960s led to a repeal of a lot of the mandatory minimums in the 70s. But then, of course, Ronald Reagan in the 1980s brought a lot of that stuff back.
And Nixon, too, he fought that tooth and nail. Like, even though the tide in the country was turning one way, Nixon was like, nope, we are going to keep pot as illegal as possible. And as a matter of fact, we're going to put it on the same level as heroin and cocaine.
Yeah, and during the Nixon administration, the Schaefer Commission, it was a bipartisan commission, found, again, that it should be decriminalized. And Nixon was just like, well, I don't want to hear that.
Sorry.
I'm going to make up my own mind about
this. I'm the president.
Exactly.
Yeah, so like you said, the Reagan era brought it back.
Not brought pot back.
No, brought back any kind of anti-government sentiment toward pot itself was redoubled in the 80s under the Reagan administration.
Just say no.
Mandatory minimums were mandatory sentences were reenacted. In 1986, thanks to the Anti-Drug Abuse Act, if you got caught with 100 marijuana plants, you got the same jail time as if you were caught with 100 grams of heroin.
Yeah, that's interesting. Plants versus grams. It's sort of a apples to oranges comparison.
Yeah, plants versus heroin. It's like plants versus zombies.
I know at one point, this is sort of off topic, but I don't know if they've changed it, but at one point they were sentencing LSD users by the weight.
Right.
And wasn't that the deal? Was like they would, like if you were an LSD dealer and you had 20 sheets of acid, they would weigh it. And they were like, well, wait a minute. You can't weigh the paper. That's like weighing the suitcase that the cocaine comes in.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's still the same, though, isn't it?
I don't know, but I do know what you're talking about. And apparently, like, if you had it mixed in with liquid or something, like diluted into liquid form, they'd take the weight of all the liquid rather than the proportion of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be, we could be, like, showing our gullibility for urban legend or not, but I know if that's the case.
I don't know if it still is, but I know it definitely was.
It definitely was?
Yeah, because I saw, like, an HBO special on these LSD dealers that were basically serving, like, life sentences.
Yeah.
For dealing acid.
Yeah.
Right alongside murderers and rapists.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to check into that.
And people who were caught with pot in the 30s.
That's right. So pot these days, cost-wise, varies a lot depending on quality. Obviously, it ranges. I love that in this article it says $1.77 to $17.66 per gram.
Right. I'd like 1 gram of marijuana, please.
Yeah, that's interesting. But these days you can expect to pay for, you know, what people consider good marijuana, about $120 for a quarter bag, which is a quarter of an ounce.
Right, which is 7 grams, right? Because there's 28 grams in an ounce.
Yeah, I think between 7 and 8 grams. But
it depends on if the dealer likes you.
Exactly. Yeah, but that's generally how it breaks down is, you know, you have it by the pound, which is, you know, the pot dealer, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then they break it down into ounces and then to quarter bags and dime bags and whatever people can afford, I guess.
Well, it's funny because in the state of the country right now, like, you can take dealer and dispensary and basically flip them and interchange them, and no matter what you're talking about, it's virtually the sentence is going to remain unchanged, basically, you know, because the marijuana dispensaries are following, like, basically the same format that marijuana dealers in this country have for decades, you know.
What do you mean, like pricing and...
Yeah, the pricing, the way it's sold, the by weight.
Oh, sure, sure.
Like, I think you still buy, like quarters and half ounces and ounces and stuff, which makes sense, but they're also getting a lot of this stuff from people who are growing it indoors in their basement, and it's like, now they have licenses for all this, but it's basically like all the people who were... doing it illegally before, or some of the people who were doing it illegally before, went and applied for licenses, and now they're doing the same thing, but they just have like a license to do it in a frame on their wall.
Yeah, and dispensaries, you're going to find a lot of other things, like edibles.
Yeah,
and they even have now cannabis strips, like you know, the little Listerine breath strips.
Oh yeah,
they have little cannabis strips. It's just a little edible strip of concentrated cannabis.
Huh.
And I guess you put it under your tongue, and that's better for your lungs, I would imagine, if you're a cancer patient or something.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's talk about the plant itself, Chuck.
Okay. Maybe the most recognizable plant, that leaf, you know?
Yeah, which is, here's a little fact for you. The botanical description of the way that marijuana leaves are arranged.
Is groovy.
Called palmately, like the palm of a hand with five fingers outstretched.
Yeah,
that's the pot leaf that's you can find on lighters and baseball caps at gas stations.
Yeah, exactly.
And the like you said, the plant itself, depending on which variety it is, it's either very tall or kind of tall, depending on whether it's trimmed or not.
Right.
And the buds or whatever that are smoked. Yeah. Are actually the flowers of the plants.
Yeah, the flowers of the female.
Which apparently are, that's sensimilla. So the definition of the word sensimilla are female flowers that have reached maturity without being pollinated.
I can't hear that word without thinking of Caddyshack.
What? I don't remember that part.
Bill Murray, a little California sensimilla.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So that's what that means?
Yes.
Interesting.
That's the term sensimilla means. So basically, unless you're like 14, if you're smoking pot, you're smoking sensimilla.
Okay.
So yes, the term sensimilla means pot.
Okay.
The pot that's smoked. Although the male flowers do have some THC. It's just far, far less of female than female.
Yeah. As a cultivator, males are not what you want. In fact, males can disturb the cycle of the female plants. So the goal of the cultivator is to get the male out of there as quickly as it can be identified, basically.
Yeah, and weed's actually a good moniker for pot because it spreads very easily. Their pollen is like 24 microns, which apparently is very easily windborne and goes very great distances.
Yeah.
There's very few obstacles to pollinization. So if you have female plants and you have what you suspect to be a male plant anywhere nearby, you want to get rid of the male plant.
Right. And then tell the officer, they must have just blown over here and taken root, sir.
Right.
These 100 plants in my backyard came from my neighbor.
Right. Their pollen is 24 microns. Come on.
Yeah. He says, tell your story to the judge, my friend.
Right.
There are about...
should also say there are hermaphroditic plants. Hermaphroditic plants.
Oh, yeah?
That feature both male and female flowers.
Those are probably a mess.
Yeah, I think that...
Or maybe that's a good thing.
I think that's like a lot of hybrid ones are hermaphroditic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there are hundreds of chemicals in the marijuana plant, 109 of which are cannabinoids. About 33 are cancer-causing, and we'll get to that stuff later, too.
But ironically, they also are cancer-killing, some of them.
It is an odd plant.
Yeah.
But we're going to get to all that stuff too, right?
Okay.
and your THC is really the main psychoactive ingredient. What's the long name for it?
Delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol.
That is THC. That is what the high that you're seeking, it lies within that chemical.
Yeah, and actually, you can point to the part of the plant where it is. If you've ever seen a marijuana plant and it has kind of this hazy appearance from far away, and you get up close and you realize that haze is actually made up of a bunch of little clearish, sticky protrusions coming off of the leaves, those are called trichomes, and that is where the THC is stored.
That's right. And depending on the plant and the variety and how it's grown and when it's harvested and the genetics and how you process it, that's all going to affect the THC level. And as a cultivator, your goal is to have the THC level as high as you can get it.
Yeah, that is up for debate as well from what I've seen. Apparently, they're just going higher and higher and higher as far as THC content goes. And there's a lot of recreational pot users and medicinal pot users
who
are saying, like, too much, dude. Like,
yeah,
Louis C.K.
Sure.
has a bit about how when he was in, like, in the 70s, he could smoke, like, a whole joint and be, like, totally mellow or cool. Now he's saying it takes, like, one hit and you go totally insane. Apparently, there is, like, a point where it's just, like, that's too much.
Well, Louis C.K. can afford better pot these days, too.
Right.
No, but you're right. It all depends on the end user, you know, what they're into.
Sure.
But generally speaking, the cultivator wants to deliver the most bang for the buck.
You would think so, sure. So, Chuck, let's figuratively smoke some pot and follow it through the body.
Okay.
Okay. You know what? We probably shouldn't do this ourselves.
No. We like our jobs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we might be fired for even figuratively smoking pot.
Well, yeah, and who wants to? Let's get, how about that scruffy-looking guy?
Farmer Ted.
Yeah, he's look at him. He's game.
So a lot of people don't know this, but we have a friend named Farmer Ted who has the very strange characteristic of having entirely translucent skin.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the Invisible Man or something like that.
Yeah, and what better person than to follow the trail of THC in the human body than one you can actually see?
Yeah, because the rest of his organs or anything aren't translucent. It's just his skin.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming in, Ted. So Ted is going to smoke a joint.
A marijuana cigarette.
Yes. And he's going to smoke what is a typical marijuana cigarette, approximately 500 milligrams of marijuana,
okay,
which translates to roughly, I don't know, maybe 10 milligrams of THC.
Okay.
So he's going to take a lighter and take it to the end of this joint. I'm making air quotes here because that's vernacular. The THC is going to be burned and carried into his lungs. So Farmer Ted is kind of high already.
Yeah.
The THC in the smoke is carried to the alveoli in the lungs. And the alveoli is where gas exchange occurs. It's where your oxygen-deprived blood comes to get a refill of oxygen to be replenished. And since there's THC smoke present in that oxygen in the lungs, the THC is going to hitch a ride into the bloodstream and travel through the body.
Yeah, so it just takes seconds.
Yeah. One of the places it's going to go is the brain. And when it hits the brain, it starts doing some pretty funky stuff.
That's right. We could ask Farmer Ted how he's feeling right now, and he'll probably say...
Yeah, he can't talk right now.
He might say that my eyes are dilating and the colors are a lot more vivid.
Yeah. I'll be hungry soon.
I'll be hungry soon. My other senses are enhanced as well. But hold on. I'm starting to feel a little paranoid.
Yes. Let's get into this. Let's get into how pot affects the brain, because it is pretty gosh darn interesting if you ask me.
Yeah, and this is how the physiological effects, the end user might have different reactions depending on, it doesn't make everyone paranoid necessarily.
No, and I really looked into it hard to find out why some people are paranoid and some people don't. Part of it is, there's two things. One, and I didn't find anything definitive, which I'm sad about, but one, the two things I came up with is, one, it depends on the pot.
Sure.
If there is a difference between indica and sativa, the prevailing wisdom is that if you smoke indica, you're going to be less likely to be paranoid.
Okay.
The other reason is it would depend probably on the existing brain chemistry of the user. My brain chemistry is not the same as yours.
Right.
And neither one of ours is the same as Jerry. So, of course, when we introduce a psychoactive chemical into that chemistry, it's going to affect it differently.
Yeah.
So that's what I came up with, basically.
I wonder if one of the reasons indica is less likely is because that's the couch-bound one, and you're less likely to be paranoid sitting on your couch rather than the more active one, like smoking and going to the Renaissance Festival.
Where you'd be freaked out stone sober. Where you'd meet John Strickland and he would mess with you if he found out you were stoned.
Anyway, I'm curious.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
I've also found there's recent research that shows the cannabinols.
Yeah.
There's a precursor chemical to them that's called cannabidiolic acid, CBD.
Right.
And CBD has been found that to actually counteract the schizoid effects of pot, like the stuff that makes you paranoid,
uh-huh.
that symptom, if you smoke a pot that has a higher CBD to THC ratio,
uh-huh.
maybe it's even or something like that, the CBD is going to cut down on the schizophrenic symptoms while leaving like the rest of the stuff intact.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that weird?
Huh.
So I wonder if indica just by nature has a higher CBD content.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
There are people that know this.
Okay, so back in the 60s, there was a researcher, his name escapes me, who started looking into what the heck made pot make you loco.
Right.
Right? And he found THC. So THC was isolated in the 60s. And from that, they reverse engineered how THC affected the brain and effectively discovered an entire system that we didn't know existed thanks to pot research. It's called the endocannabinoid system. And it's a very ancient system that's found in everything from sea squirts to every vertebrate on the planet.
Did you say sea squirt?
Sea squirts. Very primitive animals. All the way up to us.
Well, I know that I didn't quite get the endocannabinoid part, so take it away.
Okay, so
I know it works backwards.
Yes. That's a very important point. So, you know, when we do anything from our brain says, grab coffee mug.
Right.
To us thinking about how we're feeling at any given point, all of that is based on the transmission among neurons, right?
Yeah, we've covered that a lot.
Yeah.
The neurotransmitters kind of cover that gap between the neurons mm-hmm. and deliver the message.
Right. And then depending on where the neurotransmitter is, and what chemical has come across, then different things happen, right? Well, the endocannabinoid system is this kind of dimmer switch that is around all neurons that works backward to kind of say, whoa, whoa, let's not pump those neurochemicals out as frequently or in as much abundance.
Right.
And the whole point of the endocannabinoid system is to maintain homeostasis, or good for your yin, good for your yang.
That's right.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you smoke pot, your endocannabinoid system, which has receptors all throughout the body, there's CB2 receptors, which are mainly associated with your immune system.
Yeah.
And then CB1 receptors are throughout the brain. And when you smoke pot, the cannabinoids, the phytocannabinoids, which is THC in this case, go into these regions of your brain and stick to your brain, to your endocannabinoid receptors.
Yeah, they basically just kind of hijack the system.
So the systems that the endocannabinoid receptors are meant to regulate are no longer being regulated by our body's endocannabinoids. They're being hijacked by THC,
yeah.
which is not subject to our body's whims and all that. We just basically have to ride that snake out until it's over. So you end up with all these different weirdo symptoms that you normally wouldn't have, which is basically the result of your endocannabinoid system going haywire because it's been hijacked by THC.
Right.
So like your hippocampus.
Yes.
We've talked about that. That's good for learning.
Yeah, it is.
And when the endocannabinoid receptors are full of THC, you're not learning or making memories as well as normal.
Yeah, we're talking short-term memory. It definitely impairs that, and that's why if you've ever hung out with a bunch of potheads, you'll hear the phrase, what were we just talking about, quite a lot.
Yeah.
Because it's going to affect the hippocampus in that way.
Yeah, you're not forming memories.
It's also going to affect your coordination, which is the cerebellum, so you may be a little clumsier. And then you have the basal ganglia, and that directs your unconscious muscle movements.
Yeah. So the reason Farmer Ted is paranoid, he doesn't like that plant looking at him the way it is.
Right.
He's paranoid because his basomedial amygdala has been affected. Its endocannabinoid receptors have been hijacked by THC, and it's this region of the brain where we learn to fear dangerous situations. Farmer Ted is learning to fear things he normally wouldn't fear.
Right.
Because the endocannabinoids that the body normally makes are not operating the way that they're supposed to be. So he's now afraid of that plant.
Now, isn't that this? Aren't the endocannabinoids the same system that they have finally pinpointed the munchies?
Yeah.
Or activates the munchies?
Yeah, in your hypothalamus, your ghrelin production.
Uh-huh.
Remember ghrelin?
Oh, yeah.
It's that chemical that makes you feel hungry, so you go eat. Your ghrelin production and absorption is mediated by endocannabinoids in the hypothalamus, which gets hijacked by THC, which suddenly all food looks irresistible.
Yeah, and which is why it is prescribed for people going through chemotherapy and other things, because they lose their appetite and lose a lot of weight. And aside from helping to stem nausea, it also will stimulate the appetite.
Yeah. So that's the endocannabinoid system, and that is how pot affects it.
I feel like a ta-da.
Yeah, we left out the biggest part. It also causes a release in dopamine, which is what makes you feel high.
Sure.
Any euphoric feeling comes from that release of dopamine. But it's also possible that any paranoia or those schizoid symptoms that come along with it are from too much dopamine.
Right.
So that too high a release of dopamine can lead to feelings of paranoia and anxiety.
Yeah, and these feelings, the effect of THC period is going to last a couple of hours, depending on obviously how good the pot is and how much you smoked.
Right.
But the chemicals are going to be in your body a lot longer than that, with a terminal half-life of 20 hours to 10 days after you've smoked it. So if you get, you know, if you're one of the, how many percentage of companies drug test? 57%?
Like, yeah, 50-something, 53 maybe.
Yeah, depending on your weight and how much you smoked and how long you smoked.
57, you're right.
You're going to either pass that drug test or not. It can stay in your body for, you know, weeks, though.
Yeah. And there's no way to tell because it depends on you, your metabolism, and the pot.
Yeah.
The potency of the pot, too. But, yeah, your body breaks it down into five metabolites, and they test for all five just using a basic immunoassay.
Yeah.
Where they introduce an antibody to your urine, and it reacts or doesn't react and turns it a pretty color.
A pretty bad color.
Right.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Thank you.
Okay, Farmer Ted, stand back up. Let's abuse you some more.
Although he seems like he's enjoying it.
He's a little cooler now.
Yeah.
He was petting that plant a minute ago. I think
so they made up.
Yeah.
Good.
So if you can see his liver right here, right there.
Uh-huh.
So Farmer Ted is going to eat some pot this time.
Okay.
So what's going to happen? He's ingested pot orally, one way or another, whether cooked in a brownie or just eating the pot.
Sure.
And the body's going to take this and break it down, metabolize it, and send it to the liver. And when this happens, it's going to, the THC is going to hit the bloodstream in the stomach anyway. So it's going to get some sort of buzz or whatever. But in the liver, he's going to metabolize it into another psychoactive chemical that isn't really present when you smoke it. So it doesn't, it's, the effects aren't quite as pronounced, but they last longer, and there's an additional weirdo thing to it.
Well, it's going to take longer, but last longer.
Mm-hmm.
And
the effects of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But there's also the extra psychoactive chemical that's produced in the liver that's not really produced when you smoke it.
Yeah. And
isn't that weird?
It is weird. And it's also the reason why new young travelers to Amsterdam, you know, want to try their first pot brownie, and they don't think it's working. Then they try another one. And this is the ones you see, like, sitting alongside the canal, like, rocking themselves.
Yes, because it takes a little while.
It does.
When you ingest it via smoke, it's almost instantaneous. When you ingest it by eating it, it's going to take a lot longer.
That's right.
So,
I guess we should talk a little bit about whether or not it's addictive, because that's another raging debate for years and years.
Yeah.
How addictive is pot? There are all kinds of studies that contradict one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of these things that probably comes down to the person somewhat.
Yeah.
If you have that addictive personality.
Mm-hmm.
But they do see effects of pot cessation, irritability, anxiety, depression, maybe sleeplessness and insomnia, restlessness. And that's if you quit the pot after having been a user. And it's, you know, psychologically addictive like any drug. You're going to crave it if you want it.
Sure. Apparently, it can have an impact on your levels of anxiety. Like, you might not feel anxious when you're stoned, but you could feel anxious when you're not stoned. So you get stoned more often.
Right.
Which, while not necessarily a classic addiction, because the addiction model follows strictly the limbic system.
Right.
And pot, I think, activates it somewhat, but it's not really acting specifically on that. It's acting more on the endocannabinoid system.
Right.
Right? So indirectly, it might be hitting the limbic system, but it's not following that classic addiction route.
Yeah.
But at the very least, that's habitual. If you need to smoke something to get back to normal, that's a habit and a bad one because you have a crutch there.
Yeah. Unless you're Willie Nelson, and then you're just like, what's the problem?
Yeah.
You just keep smoking it.
I love my crutches. Willie Nelson.
What are some, well, I guess we can talk about some of the medicinal uses. We did talk about cancer and AIDS patients to stimulate appetite. The old glaucoma card is a big one to play.
Yeah.
If you're applying for your medical marijuana card.
It relieves eye pressure. I couldn't find how it does that.
Yeah, but it's been, that's one of the earliest uses of it.
I remember.
Oh, you remember?
I remember when all this first started to hit.
Yeah, glaucoma.
California passed legal medicinal marijuana in 1996. It was almost all glaucoma at the time, in which it seemed like everybody was like, you are so faking.
Right.
Glaucoma? You need pot for glaucoma. And then it just became more and more established as fact.
Yeah.
Became associated with helping more and more maladies.
And, of course, if you go to get your card and you go to the dispensary, they have a long list of things that it can help.
Right.
Basically, anything you can think of.
Yes.
They will put on their list.
As long as you have a prescription card, I think they're cool with that.
Well, no, that's to get the card.
Oh, gotcha.
Like the you know, the 420 doctor.
Door? Yeah. The 420 doctor. If your doctor wears Birkenstocks,
yeah,
you can probably get a medicinal marijuana card from him.
But don't see him for anything else. it can help with epileptic seizures. In fact, here in Georgia, that's been on the table due to a famous story of a boy here in Georgia whose seizures were like massively cut down by taking a marijuana oil, which has no THC. Like the kid's not getting high, basically.
It doesn't have psychoactive properties?
No.
Wow.
And Georgia is, believe it or not, trying to speed through I know it didn't go through initially a few weeks ago just because I think they didn't have time to get it through.
Right.
But there seems to be support for it.
Yeah.
But just for...
very surprising.
Yeah, just for the marijuana oil, though, not like dispensaries or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could be the beginning of it, or it could be a sea change in how
in Georgia?
Some states, you know, legalize marijuana.
I'd be surprised.
Well, but I'm wondering if it's a change like, okay, if this medicinal marijuana oil works, we'll just, we can legalize that and that's it. And
that'll
be like the model for other states.
I see what you mean. And then MS, multiple sclerosis, decreases muscle spasms. And I've seen this firsthand with a good friend. It really helps him out. And Montel Williams has famously come out as an MS sufferer who is a longtime advocate for using marijuana.
Well, it makes sense. Again, I mean, if you're having muscle spasms, perhaps your endocannabinoid system is not functioning correctly and the THC goes in and actually supplements it.
Yeah.
You know? And also, I remember I said that it fights cancer.
Oh, yeah.
If you go onto cancer.gov and type cannabis and medicinal cannabis, I think, it brings up basically a laundry list of all of the ways that marijuana helps and it's been found to fight, to destroy cancer cells.
Oh, wow.
Like THC goes in and destroys cancer cells in the liver. Apparently, it's been shown to destroy breast cancer cells. Like, not helps you feel better when you have cancer.
Right, right.
Can actually cure cancer.
Wow.
In some cases. It was a carcinoma in the liver that it was shown to be able to cure. So it's definitely worth checking out, too.
That's awesome.
And it also alleviates pain and inflammation associated with injury or disease.
Yeah.
And the way it does that is with the other cannabinoid receptors, the CB2 receptors in the body are related to the immune system. So it goes in and messes with those and says, hey, everybody, calm down. Let's stop being so inflamed.
Well, that's, I guess that's why it's prescribed a lot for arthritic conditions these days, too.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. Rheumatoid arthritis, isn't that what it's called?
Yeah, I don't know what the difference is between rheumatoid and regular arthritis.
We should do one on arthritis.
All right, let's do it.
How about that? It is still, despite all the medical research, it is still scheduled as a or classified as a Schedule 1 substance, which is the most dangerous drugs that currently have no accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. And there have been many pushes over the years to get it reclassified and not in the same group as heroin and cocaine and ecstasy.
Nuts.
But that has not been successful as of yet. But I think that will probably happen at some point soon.
It seems like it's going that way, but supposedly around the time Normal was founded, the National Organization for the Re-Legalization of Marijuana Legislation.
Is that right?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
It's quite a mouthful.
I went
That's
to
why
a couple
everybody's
of those,
called it Normal.
Festivals they used to have in Piedmont Park in the 90s, the Normal rallies.
Hash Bash.
Yeah, I saw the Black Crows there once. It was great.
Right. Normal was founded in the 70s at a time when it looked like, I mean, Carter was president. Willie Nelson had smoked a joint on the White House roof.
Yeah.
Like, it was the time for, you know, pot to be decriminalized, and everybody thought, like, it's going to happen. It's happening. It's happening.
Yeah.
And apparently, nope, it didn't happen. They pulled back from the brink. So it's entirely possible that what looks right now to be the wind of change that is very much sweeping through the country,
yeah,
it could be stopped, baffled, I guess. So the fat lady has not sung yet.
Well, I think the first step toward a federal, and the difference here is, you know, federal laws versus state laws. It's still federally not accepted, but in states like, of course, Colorado and Washington. Mm-hmm. And then how many states have medical, like 11?
20.
Or 20.
Yeah.
Okay. If anything's going to happen federally, it's got to be reclassified away from Schedule 1 first.
Right.
So until that happens, you're probably not going to see any federal laws enacted.
No.
Or repealed.
And we should say the mood of the country right now is about split a little bit in favor toward pro-pot.
Yeah.
So like in Washington and Colorado, both votes were like 55-44, 55-43, something like that.
Yeah.
And a CBS poll from 2014, I think in January, found about the same. 55% of Americans favor legalizing pot opposed to, like, I think 44-43%.
Yeah, so it's clearly moved out of, you know, just the hippie stoners at the Normal rally and to people supporting that kind of legislation that don't even use marijuana, because there is a groundswell of support that, hey,
it's not a Schedule I drug.
It's not a Schedule I drug. Alcohol is more destructive to your life and your body. And why are you going to outlaw this plant and put people in prison with a war on pot that isn't working?
Right.
It's like wasting money, whereas we could tax it and raise money.
Yeah.
So there's been a big tidal shift in the past decade, really in the past 20 years, but in the past 10, like if you had asked me 10 years ago if there would be recreational use allowed in any state, I would have said probably not.
Right.
But here we are with Washington and Colorado.
Here we are.
Like where you can grow it, you can buy it, and have, I don't know how much, but I think you're allowed to have a certain small amount, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't drive around with 10 pounds in your trunk or anything.
I don't know how much you can. It's definitely more than just like a small amount.
Yeah.
But you can just literally go to the store and buy pot. And there's actually an awesome New Yorker article called Buzzkill from late last year. And it's about this economist that Washington State hired to basically create the framework for their legal pot industry.
Like the economic model?
Yeah, and like on a macroeconomic level and a microeconomic level, he's like, whether you like it or not, you're going to be competing with dealers still.
For sure.
And so you want to make your tax money, but you don't want to make so much that you price yourself out of the market and the black market stays open. You want to get rid of the black market by basically competing against them, competing them out of business.
Right.
And there's just all these different factors that this guy like was kind of laying out, and it was really interesting.
Huh.
Buzzkill.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right, and the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
All right, there's a debate that I don't quite understand about the potency of marijuana in like the 60s and 70s versus today. The debate is that pot is much more potent than it was in the 60s and 70s. And first of all, they didn't test a wide variety of marijuana strains in the 60s and 70s.
Right. It was like stems and seeds, Mexican, like ragweed.
Schwag. Yeah. So yeah. That's the only way you can tell a true test of potency is to study a wide variety. They never did that.
They didn't test the Maui Wowie.
They never did that in the 60s and 70s, and you can't go back in a time machine. So what's the point in debating it? The pot today is how it is.
It is. And basically, what the best you could hope to do is like have Dennis Hopper smoke some pot and be like, huh? And he can be like, oh,
he's dead.
Hopper's dead?
Yeah, dude.
Since when? Yeah, I just saw him on like an insurance commercial.
He died a few years ago.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Sorry. It is sad.
Sorry, estate of Dennis Hopper.
Get Willie Nelson, though.
Peter Fonda.
Yeah, he's alive.
Okay, so you just have Peter Fonda tell you. He can tell you. There's plenty of people who could say. The point is, that is largely irrelevant because we're not dealing with creating pot policy based on the 1960s.
Right.
We're dealing with pot policy today, and we know very clearly that pot is more potent today than it was even a couple decades ago. And we know that in part because of something called the University of Mississippi Potency Monitoring Project. Basically, they get their hands on seized pot that the cops get their hands on.
Yeah.
They send some of it to Mississippi, and Mississippi tests it for potency. And they said that between 1993 and 2008, the average amount of THC across all samples rose from 3.4% to 8.8% from 93 to 2008. And it's going up, 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 apparently, now with the rise of dispensaries and the openly shared knowledge of how to cultivate pot and do, you know, what you want to genetically select for. It's up to a quarter, like 25% supposedly. And I didn't see that figure disputed. 25% THC content. That's insane. That will drive you insane. I can't imagine that. If the average is 8.8 or was 3.4 in 1993 and is now up to 25%, that's potent.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, for the top-of-the-line, most expensive pot you can buy.
Yeah, but I predict that there's going to be like kind of a retro vintage pushback.
A return to swag?
Not necessarily that, but something that's like way more toned down. Or it'll be like marketed to people who like don't want like that level of a high, I guess.
Yeah, like 70s weed.
Yeah.
Like that's all they have to do to market it.
Yeah, green leisure suit or something like that.
Yeah, boom, success.
Although I don't know if anybody would want to go back to the 70s because I think it really was very low potency, comparatively speaking.
Yeah. All right. Should we cover some of the ways that it's smoked?
Well, I already covered...
the joint, right?
Yes.
That's what Slim had.
Slim had the joint.
I do know that Slim happens to prefer the blunt.
Oh, yeah?
And that is a cigar that is sliced open and tobacco's taken out and generally mixed back in with some of the pot. And it's...
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's called a blunt.
I didn't know that the tobacco was ever mixed back in.
It depends on... I mean, you don't have to. Like a spliff is popular in Europe. And that's with regular tobacco.
Like drum?
Yeah, whatever. Just any kind of loose leaf tobacco mixed in with the pot. Yeah, I think the blunts usually, they take most of the cigar tobacco out. I think you're probably right.
And then you don't even need to buy a cigar now. They have blunt wrappers, like basically cigar rolling papers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and flavored ones too.
Yeah, I've heard of those. Mm. Interesting.
Man.
You can have your just traditional pipe. If you go into any head shop, you're going to find a big variety of all sorts of handmade glass pipes.
Or remember the brass ones with the little kind of tie-dye plastic thing in the middle for holding because the brass would get so hot, apparently.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that from the 90s? Like, did you go to Lollapalooza?
Yeah, I went to Lollapalooza.
Well, then you saw those things.
Okay. I remember the first time I smelled pot, it was at a concert.
Yeah?
And I think it was like 13. And it was such a foreign... I think I've talked about this on the show. I was just like, what in the world is that? It's like, I've never smelled anything like that in my life.
Right.
It's like someone burning a spare tire or something.
Yeah.
I'll bet. And then you've got the bong or water pipes, and that uses water to I guess cool down the smoke.
Right.
And I remember that from the Scott Baio After School Special Stoned. Did you ever see that one?
No, I saw Zapped.
That was a regular movie.
But he was growing pot in that one. He and Willie Ames were growing it at school.
Yeah, and Stoned was one of the classic After School Specials where he was a pothead that like ended up accidentally killing his brother or something. Like he went swimming and knocked him on the head with the oar of a boat by accident.
Oh, gosh.
He may not have died, though. He may have rescued him.
The After School Special that I remember most vividly is the one where Helen Hunt took PCP.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And jumped out the window, like,
God,
the second story of her school.
I mean, they scared the pants off of us.
Yeah.
Which is the point.
And Nancy Reagan was, like, off on the set, like, mwah.
But I remember hearing the bong. He smoked out of a bong, Scott Baio did, and I heard that. The bubbling sound, and I was like, well, that's a weird sound.
And then you heard it on the Cypress Hill album years later, and was like, hey, that's like, Scott Baio.
And then, of course, we've talked about the edibles. and vaporizing, which is like all the rage these days.
Yeah, and I imagine it just hit me the other day. I'll bet everyone who smokes pot uses e-cigarettes as like little vaporizer one-hitters, don't they?
Some do.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. In fact, you can buy like pre-made cartridges of like hash oil and things to stick in your little e-cigarette. I know they sell those in Colorado.
Stick that in your e-cigarette and smoke.
But we should point out, we say kids these days and teenagers, although marijuana use in teenagers has escalated over the years, you can't pin it down to one demographic. I think you would be surprised if everybody who smoked pot on a semi-regular basis was outed about who you would see. I've heard stories from friends whose fathers were like CEO executives and they had cannabis clubs where all the other CEOs that they were friends with like grew their own specialty pot and traded it among each other. So a wide range of people use it.
Although the vast majority supposedly, I don't know if vast majority is right, although according to polls or surveys, the vast majority are teenagers followed by post-teens.
Yeah.
But in between 1992 and 1999, marijuana use among teenagers doubled.
Yeah.
And you know what? I lay that almost exclusively, at least at first, at the feet of Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg.
You think so?
I put it out there, yes.
With The Chronic?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a great album.
1992.
Yeah, when I hear that album, I think of Street Fighter II.
Did you play a lot of that then?
We would sit around in college, listen to The Chronic, and play Street Fighter II.
Yeah. It was a good album.
It was a great game.
I never really played Street Fighter.
Oh, yeah, they were really good. So I found a study here.
I have to interject one other thing.
Okay.
Have you seen the YouTube of Mike Tyson clips set to Street Fighter sound effects?
No.
It's pretty awesome.
From his one-man show or?
No, from his boxing career.
Oh.
And it fits like perfectly. He's like, Shoryugen at one point.
I'll have to see that.
Yeah.
So if you're smoking pot, it's obviously not going to be great for your lungs and your body because you're inhaling smoke. And like we said earlier, there are 33 cancer-causing chemicals in marijuana. And it's going to deposit tar into your lungs, just like cigarettes. And in fact, if you smoke equal amounts of marijuana and regular tobacco, it's going to deposit about four times as much tar as regular tobacco.
What's called the tar burden.
Is it?
Uh-huh.
However, there was a large-scale, long-term study released recently by the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And they collected data from 5,000 adults for more than 20 years. Which these are always my favorite studies, you know.
Yeah.
Because you can tell stuff long term. And they found that low to moderate use of pot is less harmful to your lungs than exposure to tobacco. And I think it's, they measured airflow rate, which is the speed which you can blow out air, and then lung volume, which is the amount of air you can hold in your lungs. And they found that with tobacco, there's a one-to-one relationship. The more you lose, the more loss you have lung-wise. And with marijuana, up to a certain rate, it actually increased the airflow rate.
Huh.
And their rationale was that a cigarette smoker, like a moderate to heavy smoker, smoking like, you know, 20 cigarettes a day.
Sure.
Whereas no one's going out there and smoking, you know, well, that's not true.
20 joints a day?
Yeah, but it would be probably less than that because it's more concentrated. But you don't see people smoking five joints a day either. Unless they have,
right.
Or they're Willie Nelson or
right.
Snoop Dogg. I'm sorry, Snoop Lion.
Is he still on Snoop Lion?
I think so.
I could see how pot would have an effect on your lungs, though, as well, especially compared to cigarettes, because like no one uses a filter on their joints.
Well, yeah, and they you inhale deeper with marijuana than you do with tobacco. So those are both factors.
Yeah.
But if you're smoking a pack a day and you're smoking a lot of weed, you're not doing yourself any favors in the lung department.
Yes.
Even though it might help you fight that cancer, it may give you cancer to begin with.
Yeah, just use non-psychoactive marijuana oil like they give that little kid.
Yeah.
Or Marinol, although that's psychoactive.
Is it?
It's a THC pill.
Yeah, I remember.
And they use it for like wasting disease and,
yeah.
And to increase appetite and that kind of stuff. Just to mess with the endocannabinoid system of people who need it.
That's right.
You got anything else?
No, I mean, this could have been a two-parter, but, well, this is a good overview, I think.
It is. I hope everybody enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You learned a little something? Anything else?
Nope.
If you want to learn more about marijuana, a.k.a. cannabis, type either of those words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And let's see. Since we said search bar, that means it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Australian Smoke Jumper. Hey guys, just thought I'd write to let you know how you've influenced a major change in my life. A couple of years ago now, you did a podcast on wildfires. I already had a strong interest in firefighting, but never heard of the things like smoke jumpers or some of the science involved. Since I joined the Rural Fire Service last year as a volunteer, and last week I completed my first full bushfire fighter accreditation.
Wow.
It's been a great change and has inspired me to get fitter and more active with my community. I'm now working towards getting fit and fast enough to be a smoke jumper, which we call RAFT units in Australia, Remote Area Fire Task Force. So thanks, guys, for giving me the inspiration and drive to get out there and challenge myself. Couldn't imagine doing anything else in my spare time now. As always, love the show. You keep me mildly distracted through my slow days at work. And that is Andrew from Australia.
Nice. Thanks a lot, Andrew. Congratulations.
Yeah, keep it up, buddy.
It's pretty cool work.
Agreed.
Be safe out there. If you want to let us know about any life achievements or successes that you'd like to celebrate by sharing them with us, we want to hear about them. We are all over social media. You can find us on Pinterest, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just search Stuff You Should Know, SYSK, Josh and Chuck, in your favorite browser, and it should bring one or all of them up, right?
Yeah.
And go hang out at the coolest place on the entire web. That is StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Hey everybody, I want to talk to you for a second here about Canva, specifically Canva presentations that are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation. So start designing today at canva.com. Design for work. Just go to canva, C-A-N-V-A.com.